Dr. Worthen.
So normally I don't love to go last, but actually this is wonderful because both of your presentations feed so beautifully into my own work, and especially Mr. Chan's, because I'm also presenting about Reserve and National Guard service members. So I'm Miranda Worthen, and I'm presenting today about anger and violence and post-traumatic stress disorder. And I have no relationships to disclose. So research on these subjects began with the Vietnam-era veterans, but often that research was done long after the traumatic wartime exposures had happened. And so the current era service members and veterans, there's not been very much data collected on them around their issues with anger, violence, or post-traumatic stress disorder. And so that was what inspired this project. So this is part of a nationally representative study of Reserve and National Guard service members. It's actually the PIs here, Sandra Galea and Robert Ursano, are the same PIs who were on the Ohio National Guard study. That was sort of a precursor to their national study. So this is what I'm presenting here is data from our second wave, where I put in some scales around anger and violence. And the aims of this study were to estimate the prevalence of problems controlling anger and violent behavior in current service members in the Reserve and National Guard, to look at these problems by demographic and military characteristics, and thirdly, to look at these problems in their relations to PTSD. And I was looking at PTSD stemming both from civilian traumas and also from deployment-related traumas. So the key measures that I was using, for anger, I used the Dimensions of Anger scale, and it actually was an abbreviated version even of that short item scale. And then with violence, we assessed with a single self-report question that's been used in a couple of other studies of military populations. For post-traumatic stress disorder, we used the PTSD checklist, and we actually used questions from the PTSD checklist, but we assessed over a different time period. And we administered this for both civilian traumas that were reported and deployment-related traumas, and participants identified their worst trauma in either of those categories. And then we had basic self-report of demographic and military characteristics. So what you see here is that while problems with anger were very common, problems with violent behavior were quite rare. And it's notable that this sample has a lower prevalence of PTSD than a lot of other samples of veterans or service members, but it's actually consistent with other studies with current service members, which include both those who have and have not deployed. And here we see the adjusted model for demographic characteristics. We included age, rank, education, marital status, and some other known confounders. And this is what you see here is that anger and violence are associated with PTSD related to any type of trauma. However, both are slightly more prevalent in those with deployment-related PTSD than in those with civilian-related PTSD, and far more common among those with both types of trauma exposures. Violence does remain quite a bit more rare, though, in each category. These data show that for every standard deviation increase in PTSD symptom severity, so using a standardized way of measuring these, there was an increase in the prevalence of anger problems and problems with violence. For example, so just to help you read the table, among women with PTSD symptoms related to deployment traumas, there is a 50% increase in the prevalence of anger for each increasing level of PTSD symptom severity. And these analyses were restricted to those without the other type of PTSD. So for example, those in the civilian category did not have symptoms of PTSD related to deployment traumas. And similarly, those with deployment, we restricted to those without civilian traumas. And this is, so Orth and Wayland in 2006 did a meta-analysis looking at the relations between anger and PTSD among many different studies that included both military populations and non-military populations. And they found that the type of traumatic event, categorized as either military-related or non-military-related, moderated the association between PTSD and anger and hostility. So this led to a question that they asked about whether the observed differences are due to pre-event characteristics of who joins the military or is selected into the military, or due to the nature of the traumas that occur in the military. And here's a table from their paper that looks at the weighted mean effect size for these different studies. And you can see in the top row the R for military war experiences is quite a bit higher than for all other types of trauma experiences. So in this study, in the Reserve and National Guard sample, we actually have a group of participants with civilian traumas who have never been deployed. And so we were able to actually look at this in an all-military population. Are there differences between civilian and deployment-related PTSD and anger? So we separately analyzed the association between PTSD symptoms and anger measured continuously in this all-military sample for those with only civilian traumas and compared that to those with only deployment-related traumas. And what we found was really interesting. It looks from these initial findings that the population and not the trauma is the driving factor increasing the association between anger and PTSD in military populations. So you can see the betas are really close, as are the R's, and these are adjusted for demographic factors. However, being a feminist and my background being in working with girls who were child soldiers in West Africa, I was always curious as to the role of gender. And what you see here is actually a really surprising thing, which is that the similarity of the correlations between civilian PTSD and deployment PTSD and anger appear to be due to effect modification by gender. So the correlation between anger and civilian PTSD for men is lower than the correlation for anger and deployment PTSD for men. And on the contrary, the effect is opposite for women, with the correlation between civilian PTSD and anger for women who have never deployed being quite a bit higher than the correlation between deployment PTSD and anger among women who have deployed. And before you all say that there's no overlap in these categories, we looked only at areas where there's broad overlap in these variables. So we looked at the overall distribution using scatter plots to make sure that there was actually overlap here and that we weren't just measuring different ends of the tails. So the next step is for us to classify the types of traumas that people experience to look at whether what's different is not deployment versus civilian, but actually the types of traumas that men and women experience to see whether there are differences in the association between anger and PTSD stemming from different kinds of traumas, regardless of whether they happen in a civilian context or in a military context, and also to examine these associations around things like rape or combat, things like that. So in conclusion, while problems with anger are common in this population, problems with violence are rare, and the prevalence of both these problems is higher among those who have trauma histories associated with either civilian or military experiences, and still higher among those with problems with PTSD stemming from both of those kinds of events. And the correlation between anger and PTSD does appear to be modified not just by type of traumatic event, but also by gender. And I won't read these results again because I just presented them. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the implications. So I don't know who here heard Nancy Krieger's presentation yesterday in the EPI section about the eco-social model that she has, but that struck me as clearly what was happening here, where there are a lot of studies now that have 10 to 15 to 20% women, and people are not disaggregating by gender. They're treating gender as an effect modifier, but that actually erases the effect. It controls for the effect of gender, as opposed to thinking that there might be actual differences between men and women's experiences. And I would encourage other researchers working in military populations to do that, to look at whether there's effect modification going on by gender for whatever variables you're looking at, but especially when you're looking at mental health issues and different kinds of exposures that men and women experience in the military. And if these differences persist, research should really be aimed at trying to understand what's underlying that. Some possible hypotheses are that women who join the military are different from the men who are joining the military because of their past experiences, and that has an impact on their future health, let alone their health while they're in service. Also that the women in the military have different experiences from the men in the military, and again, these have effects on their health. Or also there might be some physiological differences that are manifest here that might also be present in civilian populations that would be really interesting to explore. So we need to answer these questions in order to better serve both our women and men service members and veterans. And I do think that part of the resistance to looking at it that way is that women have fought for so long to be included as equals in the military, and I believe they should be, but I think that kind of the military and researchers looking at the military are probably a bit resistant to looking at things that might highlight differences in men and women's experiences, because that could challenge the role of women in the military, and I don't necessarily want to do that, but I do think that as scientists and as people concerned about public health, we really have to be willing to look into that to see whether there's anything that we can do differently to support these individuals. So, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Worthen. Very interesting presentations. Thank you all. I'll open up the floor for questions. We'll start here.
A lot of you split this up by gender, but does anybody find differences by race or ethnicity?
So the question was, did anyone find differences by race or ethnicity? I'll be repeating questions into the microphone just so that way they're recorded for anyone who listens to it at a later time. And then I'm going to pass the microphone to all of them to respond.
There were actually no differences by race or ethnicity on anger or violence in this population. There were by education and by social class and by rank. Education level actually was the biggest demographic predictor of these things. Age had an interesting relationship where actually the youngest service members didn't have the highest levels of anger and violence. They had the second highest, and it was the next age group that had the higher level.
In my study, when we looked at gender, there was actually no difference either. Yes, gender.
Race.
I'm sorry. With race, there was no significant difference. And as you can see, in Ohio, it's a predominantly white National Guard. So also, this sample is not there to look further into the different races.
I'm also from Ohio. So.
In this particular study, I did not find racial ethnic differences. It was like if African Americans were, 3% of the sample, they were 3% of the people who had co-occurrence. But when we looked at substance use, separately and mental health separately, there were some racial ethnic differences. Particularly for substance use, Asian Americans had lower rates compared to their white counterparts. Depending on the substance, African Americans and Hispanics may have, lower rates. And we published that. But no, not for the co-occurrence, and I did find that interesting, that it really matched the population prevalence.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds in that order, like it matches what's going on in the general population.
Yeah.
We'll go to the back here.
Because we're school-based, we actually don't do that. We have some of our doctoral students who are family systems, doing research in family systems, and they're actually just now interviewing family units. And as you can imagine, to do that qualitative research, she's pulling through, but I think she has about 100 families so far, and then we have another student in the School of Education doing her dissertation also looking at academic outcomes and how the Interstate Compact program, which is supposed to help make, as kids transition from school district to school district, they should have the same sort of core requirements so kids don't move and get behind because this school is teaching something completely different from the school they came from. So she's looking at families processing of the interstate compact and transitions and relocations. So we have a couple of people doing it, and I'm sure those findings will come out as those folks get their data in.
Did any of your questions address, like, because you're on children, did any of your
No, so the way that we were able to get access is that similar to the Ohio Youth Risk Behavior Survey, so I don't know if you guys know, Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey is also done by the CDC and states opt to participate. So the survey we're using is the California Healthy Kids Survey, which is the state of California's Department of Education Risk Behavior Survey. And the only thing they let us do, they allow us to add a military module, which thankfully our 8 school districts implemented, and now they're actually offering it statewide. So now we have California state data around whether or not kids are military connected or not. That's the 2013, but we couldn't add, they at the state level, they're like, we'll do this military stuff, and so we couldn't ask that. But that would be really interesting.
Next question. Yep.
This is Dr. Is it Wolden?
Worthen.
Worthen. Did you look at whether or not the PTSD for women was related to maybe sexual abuse in the military? And was that civilian or was it considered military PTSD?
So that's definitely one of the things that we're looking at is the question was about whether we asked about the military sexual violence experiences in the military. So we are in the process of disaggregating what people identified as their worst trauma. Unfortunately, about 15% of people said other, and then we have these qualitative responses. So I've been working with a couple of folks to pull out what that other worst trauma was so that I can group them and then do some analysis with that. This isn't combat versus civilian. It was really deployment related. So something that occurred during deployment, but that was, for example, a rape that occurred during deployment would have gone into the deployment related trauma category as opposed to civilian related trauma category.
Right, but if it happened on a military base, not during deployment, was it civilian?
It would have, yeah, that's right. It would have been.
Other questions?
Did you see any differences between single soldiers or married soldiers?
Across the studies? So the question was about single versus married soldiers. I think the microphone's in. There were very slight differences with married conferring some small protective factor, but they were far less pronounced than the other differences. The other demographic
differences. My data looked exactly like Miranda's as well. but the National Guard in Ohio has asked us to look further into single versus married individuals since it's in the National Guard a lot of individuals experience divorce once they return from deployment. So that would be some future analyses that we'll have to look into.
Are there any other questions?
Kind of as a follow-up to what he said, was it looked at in terms of not only were you married or not, were you having your difficulties? Because I feel like that was really common.
So the follow-on question was about marital difficulties.
That could be right.
So that was not something that I used in these data that I'm presenting today, but I do think that one of the directions I'm going with this is to look at protective factors in addition to those risk factors and to see whether there is an effect of various kinds of social support, stable housing, and having enough money to meet your basic needs. All of these things that we know in the general population are associated with less anger and loss of violence. We don't have a fabulous measure of marital difficulty, but we do have some measure of that, which will be a proxy. I will be looking at that at some point.
And I echo Maria. It's similar. I didn't do have some assessments that do look at it. And again, it is a proxy because we look at if they're married, we have questions that assess various conflicts they may have experienced during that relationship. Yes, sir. So the question is about the YRBS in California, and it's the military component that's been added to it and movement, and how that was collected.
Well, it was to see whether or not we assessed movement among military kids as well as civilian kids.
Assessment of movement between military and civilian kids. Thank you.
So everyone, well, the first thing is, I don't want people to get confused. California Healthy Kids Survey is not the YRBS. It's very similar, and so I just wanted to clarify that. We actually, the military module is given to everyone, and so, for example, no one noticed it or asked me about it, but there were more people who said they had had family members experience two or more deployments than there were actual people who were military connected, and that's because this area of Southern California is around a bunch of bases, and veterans don't necessarily move away once they deactivate. It's a lovely area. I wouldn't move. so there are kids there who have had family member deployments, but their family member is no longer active duty. So there's that, and then there is the case that there are lots of reasons why kids may relocate, and we've looked at, one of the things we get dinged on is because we don't have a good indicator of socioeconomic status. Because socioeconomic status is associated with school relocation and not doing well. So we do ask everyone that, and we have kind of looked at the comparison, and we do see that, and that's why we say at the end of the day, military connection is not it, it's relocation. That could be a civilian kid or military kid, but also at the same time, deployments are always significant. So I think it's a critical thing to note that I'm controlling for deployments as well as transitions, and anyone can have a transition. And we can all agree that you know, multiple transitions like that are bad for kids, but at the same time, deployment still maintains its significance even in that place. So everyone can answer those questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions? If not, let's give the presenters a round of applause.